This is Sound and Query, the Southern Illinois University Medical Library's podcast. I'm Lydia Howes, your host and one of many friendly librarians here. Tune in for information about the School of Medicine's activities and research, library events and resources, and anything else that we deem interesting. The library is one of the first libraries ever to host the National Library of Medicine's newest traveling exhibition, Pick Your Poison, Intoxicating Pleasures and Medical Prescriptions. This interesting display focuses on the history of five mind-altering chemicals: alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, opium, and cocaine, and how their use and social acceptance have changed over time. We hope you'll visit and check it out. Today we're joined by Dr. Christine Todd, who is the chair of the Medical Humanities Department and a faculty member in internal medicine. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, glad to be here.
Today we'd like to talk to you a little bit about medical humanities. For those of us who are maybe not as familiar with this term, what does medical humanities mean exactly?
That's the most important part of my job, is to go around and explain to people what medical humanities is. When they hear about that, they say, oh, cool. And then they say, what is that? And doctors, students, people I meet in the grocery store, mm-hmm. everybody has that question. And the truth is, that is actually a really big question in the field of medical humanities. And so about five medical schools in the U.S. have a Department of Medical Humanities. And while they are some similarities, they're all different. Some are very invested in health law and health policy, some in bioethics, some in reflective writing and empathy. So those are some examples of some of the topics that we do try to mm-hmm. teach folks on campus. But each school really has a different focus. So the way I explain it to people is, there are really two steps to any medical encounter. And the first step is interviewing the patient, examining the patient, looking at their labs, and figuring out, what do you think is wrong with them? So that's step one. Mm-hmm. And so much of medical school is really focused on that. But if you think about it, just figuring out what's wrong with the patient, you haven't really helped that patient feel better yet, or take care of their health, or whatever the goal is. So then step two is working with the patient on all kinds of things. What do you need them to do? Can they afford it? Do they understand it? Does it fit in with their worldview? Mm-hmm. How does their spirituality interact with it? Is it ethical? Is it legal? What are the resources in the community to do it? What are the personal challenges in doing it, et cetera, et cetera? And all those things, ethics, cultures, worldviews, health policy, finance, economics, all that stuff is all what we try to expose students mm-hmm. to, because unless you can negotiate that stuff, it doesn't matter how good your diagnosis is. Mm-hmm. You don't accomplish anything. So medical humanities is really where science meets the human.
Okay.
And to me, that's what medicine is all about.
Yes. So I find it interesting. You said five schools of medicine in the U.S. mm-hmm. have departments in medical humanities. Why do you think there's so few, if it's such an important part of the practice of medicine?
It's one of those things where we don't really have necessarily the only claim on that material. Mm-hmm. So if you trained in the Department of Internal Medicine, you would for sure have conversations about insurance and policy and ethics and communication. Same in surgery, same in every field. So doctors and clinical departments are doing some of this stuff anyway. What's nice about having a department is we have local and regional and national experts on some of these topics who are not necessarily clinicians. Mm-hmm. And their depth of knowledge and sort of their ability to be thought leaders in some of these areas really kind of bolsters that nuts and bolts clinical education you get in these areas.
How does SIU in particular implement medical humanities into the curriculum, or encourage students to explore
this type of content and bring that into their concept of being a doctor.
One great thing about SIU is the medical humanities department did not get added on to the curriculum at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really been part of the medical school from the very beginning. And I was a really lucky person in that I got to go to this medical school when Dean Moy was still the dean,
okay.
So the guy who started it all. And there's nothing like hearing it from the horse's mouth in terms of what was this school supposed to be. And he was a guy who thought, if you want to learn about a disease, sure, read about it in a textbook and all that stuff, but you're not really learning about that disease until you work with a patient who has that disease. So the primary text, sort mm-hmm. of your Bible about that problem, should not be a textbook. It should be a person who is dealing with it. And so right there, you see the prominence
yeah.
of that sort of humanistic approach to learning about medicine. So I think it's really been part of the heart and soul of SIU ever since the start of the medical school. And so not only do students come to us and take courses, we're really integrated into a lot of what departments do when they teach students. So it's really a tradition here. And our students are often surprised to go out into their residencies and their practices and encounter all the rest of the medical trainees who have not ever spent any time rigorously thinking mm-hmm. about or training in these areas of communication and cultural competence and medical legal issues, which are so important to the practice of medicine.
So you would say that this is a strength that SIU has as opposed to some of the other medical schools out there?
It's absolutely a strength. And what I love about it is half of what I learned in internal medicine, in school and in residency, mm-hmm. is no longer true. And in many cases, the very opposite of what I learned is true.
Yes.
I was told, never give a heart failure patient a beta blocker. Now, we give all heart failure patients beta blockers because there were more scientific discoveries and there mm-hmm. were more studies and there was more data. And so we realized we have to be on a different path. There is no change in the stuff you learn in mm-hmm. medical humanities. If you spend some time thinking about cultural competency or how to really communicate with somebody who's very different than you, that's mm-hmm. true forever. These are some of the sort of the truths about the practice of medicine that never change. Mm-hmm. So to me, investing some time in medical school to learn something that's going to be true forever is really good time spent.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
It also sounds like it would be material that would be useful in other areas of your life as well. So that's always a plus.
Yes, I think so. And I think SIU has always been the kind of medical school that bragged, and I think they make true on the brag that the doctors who graduate from here are different than your run-of-the-mill doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one reason that's true is because our graduates have spent a little time thinking about the humanistic perspective on all this stuff. And they come out not having lost the ability to connect with somebody like a real person. And that really fits in with our mission in Central Illinois. I think we want our doctors to just be regular people with really good training.
Now, switching gears a little bit, you may have heard that the library has hosted an exhibit the last few months called Pick Your Poison, which is focused on 5 different mind-altering drugs. And I was just wondering what some ways medical humanities might influence the way that doctors approach or treat individuals who come to them with substance abuse problems.
Sure. A big part of what we talk about with students is empathy and developing empathy. And if you're going to empathize with somebody, you really have to be able to take on what they're experiencing
mm-hmm.
without judgment. And when someone's a real nice person who's very much like you are, that is simple, right? But when you encounter people whose lives and whose perspective on the world are really different,
mm-hmm.
That becomes very, very hard. And you can get very judgmental about their choices and about how they are, even without realizing it. And of course, folks who do things that are illegal, you know, like use illegal substances, are really hard for doctors to approach in a non-judgmental factor. So to me, one of the chief ways that we can break down that kind of rigid, well, you are a criminal and I don't like you thinking, which might be just fine in other parts of your life and probably kept you out of jail, you know, so that you could go to medical school or whatever, to break down that kind of thinking so that you aren't having a negative judgmental interaction with a patient, because that's never going to help anybody get better from anything. So one way that we can develop empathy is through the arts, by music, movies, books that tell the narrative of a different kind of lifestyle. We can experience it sort of in the most closely secondhand way that's possible. And of course, artists are great communicators, right? Great art is something that just reaches right out and shows you a different way of thinking of the world. Even sometimes when you're resistant to thinking that way, it kind of forces this new perspective on you. And I think that's really helpful in having a good relationship with a patient who's really, really different from you.
You mentioned specifically books, music, art, movies. What are some of your favorite movies or books or pieces of art for people that are interested in medical humanities? And maybe these could just be your personal favorites or some of the best starting places for a fledgling doctor or a newbie in medical humanities.
Well, a couple of years ago, I sent an all-campus email around and asked people for this same question, like, what books or movies have really influenced you? And the responses I got, I didn't get a lot of responses, and the responses I got were like movies and books that were about being a doctor or about being in the medical profession. And I have experienced that myself, so I don't really feel like I need a ton of other input, although it can be very interesting. So I'm going to tell you about a couple things that really influenced. I don't think these books and movies sort of influenced my ability, I think, to empathize with groups of people that I really would never have encountered if it hadn't been for the arts during my young life. And I think influenced some of the choices I made as a professional later on. So to me, the biggest one was a book that I found just going through the stacks of my public library when I was in like junior high school. And it's a book called The Liar's Autobiography by Graham Chapman, who's a member of Monty Python. He's the dead one.
So obviously, that's great.
Right. And so I really enjoyed Monty Python. My brother kind of turned me on to that. And I saw this book that was written by him. And of course, the title, A Liar's Autobiography, I loved, because I'm like, wait a minute, you're supposed to tell the truth in your autobiography. But of course, people lie all the time about their own personal history. You know, kind of lesson one, actually, for a doctor, is that what patients tell you is not always exactly the unvarnished truth. But they're trying to sell you a story, and that's important, the story they're trying to tell, just as important as what the quote-unquote truth is. A big part of that autobiography was about his realization that he was homosexual and how he dealt with that in, like, 1960s Britain, where it was actually still illegal, and how he told his friends about it and how he sort of self-realized it and what it meant and how he dealt with his parents. And I had never read a book that talked about homosexuality in some sort of accepting kind of way. Yeah. I grew up in a pretty strict religious background, and so my information was that that was very wrong and you should, like, fight against it. And I read this book and I realized the kind of courage that he had to develop in himself to be who he really was. And that was a really inspiring story in a lot of ways. And I found out later that Graham Chapman was a doctor. He went to medical school. He was an ear, nose, and throat specialist. And that his spirit of accepting other people, accepting yourself, being who you were, was one of the first examples I ever saw of maybe how the kind of attitude a doctor had to adopt in order to kind of live a good life as a doctor. Mm-hmm. So that book is still really inspirational to me. And I have a like a first edition copy.
Oh, wow.
And I would run into a burning building to save that book. Very, very important to me, and really interesting book if you can get your hands on it. The other book that I love, which is kind of about the drug culture, is Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And the book is great, and the movie by Terry Gilliam, another member of Monty Python.
Yeah. That's you seem to like Monty Python.
The movie is fantastic, too. Okay. They actually didn't write a script for the movie. They just handed it
over
the book. And so it's very, very true to the book. They're both really good.
Okay.
And they both kind of give you a glimpse of what it's like to be on hallucinogens, which is really interesting.
Yeah. I can imagine that being able to get into a look on how it's like without a doctor actually having to try a hallucinogen mm-hmm. would be a definite benefit.
Yes. I mean, that book is, a lot of it is about how Hunter and his friend Dr. Gonzo kind of figure out which meds to take at which time to produce which effect. And kind of that experience of someone other than a doctor working pharmacology out for themselves is really interesting.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned about how you were in junior high and reading this book mm-hmm. that gave you for the first time a different view of homosexuality mm-hmm. and being yourself. Mm-hmm. And over time, that attitude about homosexuality has definitely changed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that it just has to do with our culture, which is a topic that we also see in our exhibit, the Pick mm-hmm. Your Poison exhibit, how culture changes the attitudes and the use of these substances. I was wondering if you had any examples of how the use or attitudes towards substances have varied between cultures.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And that exhibit is really interesting because it was like, and this was a cure mm-hmm. and rich people who could afford it took it or doctors recommended it. And uh-huh. it was like a respectable thing to do, to give your kids cocaine or, you know, whatever it was. And then the culture changed and it became crack cocaine and only criminals are doing that and we should arrest and jail all those people. So it was, you know, you had to be a Tony fashionable person to give your mm-hmm. kids cocaine, you know, decades ago. And now, of course, you're just a decrepit person for using the same substance. So it shows you how much our culture changes, even over short periods of mm-hmm. time, and how things that were illicit become accepted, things that were widely accepted become illicit. And the exhibit is really interesting because you can see some of the social and political influences that play into that. And it just reminds you to kind of keep an open mind about things. Things that are no-nos now are totally acceptable in other cultures and in other times. So we're a product of our culture. So that sometimes helps me not get too stuck on mm-hmm. what this patient is doing is right, and what this patient is doing is wrong.
Because all of us have different ideas of right and wrong.
Yeah, and there is no final arbiter because it goes all over the place if you uh-huh. look at history. It's just kind of the way things are right now.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. It was a pleasure to have you, and I know I've learned a lot.
Well, you're welcome. This was fun.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to have you back some other time, yeah. and we can talk about something else.
Great.
Thanks for listening to Sound and Query. For more information about the library, its services and resources, or to learn about future events and podcasts, please visit our website at www.siumed.edu/lib.